So the title of the talk this evening is Breaking Open. Breaking Open. A few years ago, when I was on my way to Bodh Gaya in Bihar in India to teach a retreat at the Thai monastery there, I had a dream. And in the dream, and it was a rather graphic, horrific dream, in the dream there was a person being killed. There was a man's head being broken open. Literally, in the dream, very graphic, very visual, I won't go too far with the details, but the essence of the dream was that movement of breaking open. And so I reflected on this. You know, you have a dream and some of them are really insignificant, and you really know when you've had a dream that is meaningful. So the essence of the dream was breaking open. And I reflected on it and I thought, I'm just about to teach a retreat. And so, I understood the dream to mean breaking open the Dharma. Breaking open the Dharma teachings. When we come to a retreat, one of our goals is to be with ourselves in a fresh and new way, to break open to a way of being that's free, that's unbound, not born of habit. And so this movement of breaking open is incredibly precious in the Dharma world. And we need to discover for ourselves how to break open the truth of things. How to break open our life so that it's contented, fulfilled, so that we live with wisdom and joy. So when we break open our life, we break open to wisdom. We break open to truth. Relinquishment or letting go is also a breaking open. Do we need a translation for relinquishment?
You said letting go.
Letting go. So letting go is breaking open. We also break open to a heart of peace. And of course, there's a sutta in the Buddhist texts about this very thing. We break open to a way of living that isn't self-centered, that isn't conditioned by our self-view, where we're not any longer at the center of things. And our life isn't all about what's best for us. So, the sutra I want to speak about is called The Exposition of the Elements, and it's Sutta 140 from the Middle Length Discourses. And in my talk today, I'm aware that there's people who've not meditated very much, and there's people who've meditated a lot. So I'm trying to include things for everybody. So if you don't understand something I say, it's the first night, so never mind. So the story goes that the Buddha went to visit his friend Bhagava, the potter. And the Buddha asked if he could stay in the potter's room at the back. And Bhagavad said, of course, you can stay there, but there's a homeless man there. And if it's okay with him, you can stay there too. So it happened, of course, that the homeless man, one of the wanderers of India, Fukusati, his name was, had gone forth unto the Buddha, but he'd never met the Buddha, he hadn't seen the Buddha, so he didn't recognize him. But he had begun to meditate and practice in the Buddha's tradition, because by this time the teachings of the Buddha had spread across the north of India. And so the story goes, they meditated together most of the night. So please let this be an inspiration to you. If you want to really understand the Dharma, please feel free, if you have the energy, to meditate most of the night. The hall will be open. So they sat there together. And then apparently the Buddha could see that this man was really ripe for awakening, ripe for understanding. And so he gave him the following teaching. He taught him that there were four foundations upon which to live one's life. And these four are the foundation of wisdom, the foundation of truth, the foundation of relinquishment, and the foundation of peace. I'm going to just take each of these four things, rather briefly tonight. One of the meanings of the word Dharma, which generally means the teachings of awakening or the teachings of the Buddha in this case, one of the meanings is that which supports. So these four areas, if we live with them as our foundation, support us. They support our life. So, to read a little from the sutta. The sutta says, one should not neglect wisdom. One should preserve truth, cultivate relinquishment, and train for peace. Instead of training for war, we train for peace. So, let's start with the first foundation. So, wisdom. Wisdom is really getting to know ourselves. It's also realizing that it is possible to end our suffering. It is possible to find relief. In Australia, one of the people who came to a retreat told me about a dream. I'm really on a theme of dreams tonight. And in the dream, he said, he was in India. And he said he was sitting on the ground and he was sorting through plastic and rubbish. Yet, he said, when he awoke, he felt that the dream was so beautiful. And he said, I knew the dream was important, but I didn't understand it. And he said, I held the dream. I had the dream a long time ago, and I've just held it close to my heart, and I don't understand. And I said, I wonder if it's telling you to sort the rubbish of your life. And when I said that, he just laughed. And he said, oh my goodness, I have never thought of that. So sometimes our dreams tell us something significant. That actually we can start to sort the rubbish, so we let go of that which we no longer need in the way we live, the way we behave, the way we speak, the way we eat, the way we communicate, the way we relate to others. And that this process of sorting the rubbish can actually bring an extraordinary sense of peace and beauty and freedom. And so this young man set about reflecting on his past, giving up destructive behaviors, letting go of things that he knew he was doing that were harming him. So sometimes we have to really look and go, do I need to give something up? Do I need to let go? Do I need to sort something out? What's a wise response to my life? So sometimes we're asked to let go of all that we no longer need. So we don't neglect wisdom when we listen inwardly, not only to our dreams, but our the inner voices of wisdom that we have. So when we're attentive, we're being wise, we're taking care, we're shining the light of wisdom on all that happens in our life. So this is the direction. And then in the text it says, and when we see everything with, it says proper wisdom, but when we see everything in this way, we look at our bodies and we look at all things and we see this is not mine, this I am not, and this is not myself. So when we see life like this, so for example, when we see the body and we give up the attitude of possessing it, that it's mine and I'm this body and the body ends here, and I'm separate from you. When we give up that notion and start to explore and see for ourselves, is it really true? Check it out. Have a whole week. Because this view, I am the body, leads to extraordinary fear. The fear of death. The fear of the end of this form. So in the a very classical Buddhist text, we are asked to view the body as elemental, like to see its hardness and softness and warmth and wateriness and so on, rather than view it as a possession or as mine, or to say I am the body or I'm in the body, or this is me, this is who I am. So to look with wisdom is to have a fresh look at some of our perhaps long-held views about how we see ourselves and how we relate to just being alive. You'll notice over the days that wisdom is also not wanting something to be or wanting the absence of it. Sometimes desire will arise. It will happen for you, I'm sure. You'll desire a really good coffee, or you'll desire some, you know, chocolate, or an ice drink, or the comfort of your own bed. There will be a desire that arises. And wisdom is not to go in blind pursuit of our desires and have our consciousness thrown all over the place, because that only leads to misery and unhappiness. Just watch for yourself. When we really want something and we can't have it, it's difficult and challenging to find steadiness with it. But that's our job, that's our challenge, that's the direction. To be steady with all that arises. Or we might want the absence of something. We want the absence of an unpleasant feeling. we just want it to stop, to go away, to not be there. It might be a thought we don't like. We want it to go away. So part of our exploration in these few days will be to see if we can relate to this whole process of liking and disliking, wanting and not wanting, attraction and aversion, with incredible steadiness. And to see into it, to look into it. Because there's conditions in the world, like today it was hot. So you're sitting in here, it's tired, you might be tired, that's a condition, it's late, maybe you're near the air conditioner and you're too cold, maybe you're in the middle and you're too hot. These are all conditions. But if our happiness were dependent on that, we wouldn't be happy at all. We're utterly miserable. So we need to find and understand and know for ourselves that which is not dependent upon the conditions of this life. Sometimes we can shift and change the conditions that lead to suffering, but actually sometimes we can't. So we need to be steady in the face of the hot weather, for example. And then we can discover a contentment, a fulfillment, a happiness that isn't dependent on just what's happening today. Isn't dependent upon, we call it in Dharma language, the conditions of this life. So the second foundation is truth. And the Buddha says truth is that which has an undeceptive nature. Truth is that which has an undeceptive nature. So it doesn't deceive us. We see reality as it's come to be. We can't claim truth. Truth isn't ours. It doesn't belong to the personality. So we preserve truth when we don't claim it. But we can all be touched by truth. We can have a profound knowing of truth. We can just see the trees, the sky, each other. We can smile, speak, just the very truth of that. Can't speak here. Usually. Just the very truth of that meeting. Without any overlay through our imagination. This is true. So, 2 years ago when I was in India, I had my 60th birthday. And I was in Saranath where there's some teachings happening, and so we had a lovely group of teachers and other Dharma people I'd known for years for lunch. And then in the evening, a friend had arranged a wonderful vegetarian thali at a very upmarket restaurant in Varanasi. And Christopher, whom some of you know, he's my dear Dharma friend and whom I've known for the last 44 years or so. He teaches here a lot in Israel. Christopher said, oh, look, I'll come, but I'll only come if we can go afterwards to the river and put in the river our friend Nadama's ashes. And I said, fine, okay, we'll do it. So, there we were. There were 7 of us. We went in a car to Varanasi. We had a fabulous meal together. So celebrating birth. Celebrating my birthday. A big birthday. 60th birthday. And then, we went to the river. And there, my friend Nadamo had died rather suddenly and unexpectedly. And the year before, he and my daughter had climbed, and myself, had climbed Arunachala, the mountain in South India. And I'd had a very, very sweet time. Yet, there we were, with his ashes, in a little plastic container, with a lid. And then, the tradition is, of course, in India you throw the ashes in the Ganges, in the river, and they float away with the current, and it's known as a wonderful holy place, and many people come there to die so that they can be cremated on the banks of the river. It's the holiest Hindu city, and then the ashes can be put in the river and float away. So there we were. Christopher's pouring the ashes. And the ashes didn't really go quite in the river. They sort of went in the mud at the side, a bit. And there were no flowers, and there wasn't a boat ride, and there weren't candles. It was fairly unceremonious. And in that moment, I thought, okay, here's birth, and that's death. So there's birth and death in one day. So this body will end up just like that. And this is the truth. This is the truth of things, and it's a truth that we don't want to know, we don't want to hear, we don't want to see. Yet it is the very truth of things. So as I watched this, I thought, how is it possible that we can just hold a really conventional notion of self-existence? So, if you want to reflect on birth and death, the banks of the River Ganges are a wonderful place to do it. You can see there the burning guts, the places where they burn the bodies. You can watch that process, and then the ashes go into the river. The teachings, of course, point to that which is not bound by birth and death. Dharma teachings point to what's called the deathless. And I know it's the first night, but the deathless is simply liberation through non-clinging. So when we don't cling to anything, we recognize that which is not bound by birth and death. And this is freeing. Yes, the deathless is defined as liberation through non-clinging. So when we don't cling to anything, we see and know for ourselves that direct experience of life, being alive, which is not bound to birth and death. And this is the deep and profound Dharma teaching, teaching of the Buddha. You'll hear a lot about it over the next week. So back to my theme of truth. So, we don't see truth. We're really often quite blinded by our own perceptions. I'm going to tell a little story here. I was teaching a retreat in the forests of Australia. There's a wonderful place with rainforest by the sea. And there's little cabins and dormitory rooms. And a big hall so about 100 people can come. And I was in the shower in my cabin, And I don't actually have very good eyesight anymore, hence the glasses. But I obviously wasn't wearing them in the shower. And so the shower screen was quite fogged up with moisture. And as I looked through to the toilet outside, I saw what I thought on the floor was this brown kind of mess coming out from the base of the pipes. I saw this brown sort of something like this size on the tiles on the floor. And I thought, uh-oh, this could be extremely unpleasant coming out of the bottom of the toilet pipe. And I thought, okay, I'll just look at it when I get out of the shower. And then the brown blob jumped and moved, and I got such a fright. And I thought, it's a creature. It's in Australia we call them bandicoots. So it's like a little marsupial about this big, like a big rat about this long. And I thought, oh, it's a bandicoot. And then I looked and it moved again. And then the dawning. Guess what? It was the reflection of my own foot in the glass. So you see, this is perception. We don't perceive the truth of things. There's no bandicoot in the bathroom. With our imagination, we project onto reality so often that which isn't there. Just isn't there. And this process happens over and over and over again throughout each day. We just don't realize that much of what we're experiencing is our own projection onto reality. We don't see it. So our perceptions veil or cover the truth of things. So, just finally on truth. Truth frees us. We know something is truth when there's a movement within us that frees up our life. We know we've been touched by truth and life becomes more free, more open. Even the saddest moments of our life can be a moment when we really see the truth of things. And some of you have heard this story before, so please forgive me. The most sad, I think, moment of my life was seeing my son holding his dead child. My little grandson died from a brain tumor. He was diagnosed with cancer when he was 5 months old, and he died just before he was 2. And so in this moment, my son was holding my grandson, Finn, who had died, and his mother was wrapping his little body in some silk. And so at that moment, his face was covered for the last time. And so this moment where we no longer see somebody we love again is the truth of things. But it's not really what we want to know or want to happen or want to see. So he was covered and wrapped in this beautiful piece of silk. and placed in a little coffin that had been made by some friends of my son. Beautiful wooden coffin with some blown glass decorative inlay. And his mother had sewn this beautiful lining. And so he was placed in that. And then the grandparents and the parents, we all stood arm in arm and side by side, and the coffin went into the fire to be burned. Then we went outside later, and as we were leaving this place, my son looked up and he saw the chimney stack, and above the chimney stack there was just the small particles in the air, the distortion of the air by the heat. And my son said, in this kind of moment that it just will stay with me forever, he said, "Look, look, look, there goes my Finny boy, there goes my Finn, there goes my child." And so it was the form of the baby becoming the formless. So the particles went up into the sky, into the air, and could be no longer seen. So this is the truth of this body, this body, this one, will go from form to formlessness, eventually, somehow. But the remarkable thing was, in this moment, it was a kind of comfort. It was, the truth of it was somehow comforting. That we could just look and see this whole process. And so in that moment, for us both, yes, it was very sad, but there was the truth. And when we see the truth, even if it's something we don't want to see, it brings release. It's freeing. So even in the face of our greatest suffering, our most difficult challenges, our most difficult times, we can find relief when we rest in the truth of things. Okay. So the third foundation, relinquishment, letting go. So that requires us to give up everything, absolutely everything. All ideas of who we are, how we'd like to be, how we're not, what we want out of the retreat, our ideas about whether we're a good meditator or not. It requires us to let go of everything. Not just the things that are easy to let go of. So if you take one thing from this retreat, please remember that Dharma teachings are about liberation through non-clinging, not holding on to anything, not even to those we view as most dear and most precious. And the fourth foundation is peace. The foundation of peace. And in the text it says, the tides of conceiving, so to conceive is to construct, to put together. The tides of conceiving do not sweep over one who stands upon these four foundations. And when the tides of conceiving, so this process of mental conceiving it's referring to, of mental construction, when we're not overwhelmed by our own mental formations and constructions, we become a sage at peace. Or we're called a sage at peace. So one of our great challenges as human beings on the planet is to find a way to live with peace, to live in peace, to live in peace not only with our inner conflict and turmoil, but to live at peace with others. And here in Israel, of course, you know the difficulty of that. And so in the sutta, it speaks about conceiving being bound to desire, being bound to identity, and also to a view. But perhaps that's for another talk on another night. So when we live with these four foundations, two supporters, we break open to a peace that's boundless, limitless. We break open to a way of living that's in accordance with truth. We break open to being receptive. We break open to a life that's engaged and full, joyous, fulfilling. And we find a very natural way of being with all of those things which are painful, as well as being with all of that which is pleasant and precious in this very life. We also, of course, break open to that which is not bound by any view of form or formlessness. So let's just sit for a moment, if you would, quietly. May all beings live with receptivity and a spirit of openness. May all beings inquire into the truth of things. And may all beings know the heart of peace. So I hope with that rather broad sweep, I managed to break open the Dharma teachings just a little. Thank you very much for listening.